You know how people say age is just a number? Well, turns out they were kind of right. Your calendar age doesn't always reflect how old your body actually is. I recently learned this when I took the True Age test from True Diagnostic. I was a little nervous to find out my real age, but get this, my biological age came back 6 years younger than my actual age. I was considering hanging my results on the fridge like we did for our kiddos when they were little. But here's the thing. It wasn't just a vanity boost. The test showed how different systems in my body are aging, like my brain, heart, immune system, and metabolism. Apparently, my brain is doing great, but my metabolic health needs a little TLC. So now I've got personalized tips, backed by science, to improve that and slow aging overall. And honestly, the test was super easy. Just a painless finger prick, pop the sample in the mail, and a couple weeks later, I had this incredibly detailed report that made me rethink how I eat, sleep, and manage stress. If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use my code MINDFUL to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com, code MINDFUL at checkout. Your future self will thank you.
You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
Well, we have to figure out what caused the congestion in the first place, because if you're doing flush after flush, you're getting this temporary high. And like, mind you, it is really depleting on the system. You're not just flushing out, you know, a lot of toxins. You're also flushing out a lot of essential minerals. You're flushing out, you know, so many toxins at a time that it's really making an impact on your adrenals, your nervous system. It can irritate the kidneys, the liver. And so, yeah, it's like, you know, people in the detox world think that you can just pull stuff from the body. I did it too. I ended up in the hospital after doing that.
Ava Hoft, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I was checking out your stuff on your website, and honestly, it hits home for me. The idea of detox and healing, very near and dear to my heart. I went through quite the journey myself, and I don't know, maybe I'm still on it a little bit, and maybe I could learn something today that might help me wherever I'm at. But you seem to be also, you have gone through something very significant, and from the wound comes the gift. It seems like you found a way to help others, and I think that's just such a natural story that arises in some people's lives, and I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, not an easy one, but it definitely, you know, I always like to tell people, like, the journey is the destination, and it's really been a beautiful one to kind of overcome. I mean, there's always more to do, and I'm sure that you can relate to this as well, especially with detoxification. With the world we live in, there's always more to detox. So I'm sure you'll take some gems away today, I would hope. But yeah.
So I assume you went through some real pain and figured it out on your own. That's the common story. Like, people are generally just failed by the allopathic system, as great as it can be in certain situations. It seems like some of these chronic, especially when there's like gut related, just don't feel good, don't know why, doesn't show up on a test, and you have to like dive in on your own and figure it out. Is that kind of how it played out?
Yeah, for sure. Like, that's the story to a T.
What specifically were you dealing with?
I feel like the better question is, what have I not dealt with? I think it's one of those. Yeah, I was born, you know, with like a lot of different issues already from like a young age, like having a lot of eczema and food intolerances and just like having depression at a young age. And I was diagnosed, it's like, I don't even remember my list of diagnoses, you know, like chronic fatigue and like I would have insomnia at like age 12, 13, would sleep like 2 hours a night. Just like a lot of different, you know, things. And I was really, really grateful to have parents who were pretty holistic. So I was, you know, brought to like homeopathic people and like psychics when I was really young, which is really cool. But even the holistic people couldn't really figure it out. So it was very much a journey of at a young age, like really just being out on my own. And I think like I got really, really sick when I was 14. I got diagnosed with chronic CMV, which is a viral activation, so they say. And I ended up being bedridden for really 2 years, after which once I finally recovered and my immune system got a little bit stronger, I also got diagnosed with anemia and ended up having a ferritin level of like, I think it was 3. And that's like, I mean, really, really disastrously low. So I ended up being bedridden again for another year. So I ended up like missing out, you know, a couple years of my high school and having to redo a lot of that. And it really quickly spiraled me into like suicidal ideation, depression. Like I just felt, you know, alone, couldn't figure out my health issues at a very young age. And from there, like once I started feeling better, which took a few years, I ended up rolling into the modeling industry, which I was in for about 10 years. And that really, really started off, you know, my eating disorder, like other types of depression, more so like, you know, I mean, everyone knows how toxic the modeling industry is. So like constant body image things, like comparison, wanting to lose weight quickly. And so by my agents, I was put on all these different diets to try to, you know, lose weight as fast as I could from the keto diet. And then I went to like raw vegan and just cycled way through quickly to these diets. And that really ended up with me having insane gut issues, ended up going to the doctors, just got told I had IBS and I should eat more, you know, whole grain bread and cheese. And like, as they tell you, especially in Holland, which
if
is where
only
I'm
was from. That easy.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, okay, great. I, you know, definitely didn't even try that. I was like, okay, this is advice that's outdated very, very, very many years. And yeah, from there kind of was pushed into figuring it out on my own, as I'm sure it sounds like many of other practitioners and other people have to do these days. And, you know, I went through all the more conventional approaches, the holistic routes, all the way from like, oh, I have to do a SIBO protocol and maybe antibiotics will just kill it off. And maybe going on all the gut healing supplements will do it, or maybe a medical medium cleanse. And I'm going to do, you know, all sorts of diets and cleanses. And there was, of course, temporary relief. I feel like everyone always will feel better for like a month or so, and then you're right back where you started. And that was my journey for about 6 or 7 years. And I got so fed up with it and just kept kind of searching and going. And then I stumbled upon detoxification. And it just, I remember kind of going into this, and I got introduced to it mostly through the lens of liver flushing and mucoid plaque removal. And at the time I was like, what are these things? What are these words even? And it blew my mind, first of all, that none of the holistic practitioners that were out there were talking about these things. You know, liver congestion has a huge correlation to a lot of our gut issues. And specifically regulating microbial growth, right? Like regulating candida and all these things.
Wait, can we spend some time on there for a bit? So you said mucoid plaque and liver flushing, and I have questions about all that. Were you just saying that the liver plays a role in managing the microbial stuff too?
Yeah, huge, huge. So bile, which is obviously an essential digestive fluid, it is kind of like the regulatory fluids of your microbiome. So if your liver gets congested, if it's blocked up, then the microbes in your gut kind of can just go haywire. There's really nothing that kind of like regulates them essentially. And this is, you know, we can't even go into liver congestion. There's so much, I mean, I have so many different things to say about that, because of course, like medications, hormonal birth control, like, but even things like hypothyroidism and hormonal issues can basically prevent proper bile acid production. So there's so many different reasons why we live in a day and age that our livers are really congested. And the reason why I found it so like mind-blowing on my path is because when I started getting into liver flushes, that was the first time I actually saw relief from my chronic SIBO symptoms, right? Candida, like all of these things that I had been trying to attack as functional medicine loves to do, and even natural medicine. And I started realizing like, okay, this is definitely not, you know, not the way to go. So yeah, like liver congestion and microbial balance has like, they go hand in hand. So from there, I kind of went overboard, as I'm sure many people will do.
Actually, and I was let's spend a little more time on that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Great. So from what I understand, bile, among other things, I know it plays a role in like digesting fat and but yeah, it's like detergent for the guts essentially. And it should have like a slippery viscosity, like dish soap does in mm-hmm. a way. And for multiple reasons, it could get sluggish. I think elevated estrogen is one of the things that can do that, which I think a lot of people are walking around with due to a myriad of reasons. But also, from what I understand, you know, when we are getting rid of toxins, we're using liver pathways to conjugate, to make toxins water soluble or more water soluble. So, or maybe it's the other way around. Yeah. Water soluble so that they could go out and be excreted through the stool or the urine. But from what I don't know if this is 100% true, but I guess bile in itself is very both nutritionally expensive to make and metabolically expensive to make. So the inner wisdom has figured out a way to spare it by recirculating it and saving mm-hmm. it, mm-hmm. which in theory is great. But in our environment, for a lot of people, there's so much toxins in that that when you are recirculating the majority of it, you're like retoxifying yourself constantly. Is that how you understand it?
Yeah. So, you know, in my understanding, I mean, it is absolutely true that we need to recirculate some of our bile. That said, with a lot of people having some level of constipation where they don't have adequate bowel drainage, then if that, let's say, you know, the liver pushes out a bunch of toxins and then they actually sit in the colon for way too long, too much of that gets reabsorbed. So it is about just having really, really good bowel drainage first, which is why we tend to work right in the, when it comes to drainage work, we always focus on the colon first. Because if you're going to start to flush the liver or you're going to start to dump more toxins from the liver, but you don't address the chronic constipation, which by the way, can happen even if we're having 1 to 3 bowel movements a day. Like when we have obstructions in the bowels, you know, stools can go around that. So you'll have people with chronic diarrhea or something like that, that actually have partial bowel obstruction that are chronically constipated. Mm-hmm.
So they won't think they are. Remember I definitely went through constipation for a while when I was dealing with my issues, and I probably made things worse by like trying all the stuff and pushing the liver before like the bottom of the funnel was working
in there. Yep.
And it, the way I remember explaining it to my doc, that the way I felt it was, it's like I would go every day, but it's like on Wednesday, instead of removing what I ate on Tuesday, I always felt like I was removing Monday's food. Like I was just always like chronically one day behind or couldn't catch up. So, you know, if you were going by number of stool a day, whatever, everything is fine. Like if you're filling out a form, it's like everything is fine. And, you know, what's the problem? But yeah, so you get all that stuff sitting there, and that's really common. And really any kind of stress you have, whether it's emotional or a microbial thing or whatever, is likely to slow down mm-hmm. motility.
Yeah.
And make things worse, which I'm sure we'll get to, really speaks to the value in going upstream to the nervous system to really allow for things to really feel safe or in a place where it is even time to heal and get that signaling. You said something else too. So as far as a liver flush, when you say liver flush, is that to flush bile? Is that to get something that's in the liver out of the liver? What does that refer to specifically?
Yeah, so liver flushes are, I don't know if you're familiar with Andreas Moritz's work. It is basically something that will trigger a massive bile release, but therefore also will trigger gallstone release. So it is something that is done periodically. I believe there's a story of like the history of it essentially being that when we were like way, way back ago, you know, we would go these times where we would go without a lot of animal dietary fats. And then, you know, a big animal would be hunted and we would feast on the organs and things like that. And that would actually allow our gallbladder to flush because there's this buildup of bile and then this massive release. Now we don't do that anymore. We just eat fat all the time, which is great because we need to keep bile flowing because of, you know, the toxicity these days. However, we don't ever eat like, you know, we don't drink a whole cup of olive oil in one sitting, which no one should do, by the way, because it's extremely dangerous if you don't actually open the bile ducts previously. So the idea of a liver flush is that you abstain from fat for probably about a day, and then you take things that actually open the bile ducts, they soften the stones, and then you drink a large amount of oil combined with lemon juice or grapefruit juice, and that will flush the liver. So then you see releases of stones, but also, again, because it is so massive in microbial regulation, you can see people flush out entire candida cultures or a lot of parasites from the liver. So that was my journey when I just started. I had no idea that I had a liver infestation of liver flukes, which are a type of parasite, and I flushed out about 500 of them. It was actually pretty disturbing to see just from these liver flushes. So never touching any antiparasitic herbs. And
is a liver fluke that you're flushing out? What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so liver flukes, I mean, they can be really small. They can be bigger when they're adult liver flukes. So it's really hard to say the size of them because they can come out, like you can even see their egg sacs come out. That was like my case. And the crazy thing, and this is really when I went down the rabbit hole of heavy metals and parasites and the bioaccumulation of heavy metals, is that the ones that I was releasing were metallic. Like they were literally full of metals in the sense that they were fully shiny and metallic. And that was, yeah. Super crazy. So
500, that's not all at once, I assume.
No, it was over a few flushes. But like typically people will see, you know, massive stones and biliary sludge come out. And I had less of that. And it was more just like when flukes come out, they look like these rolled up tomato skins or kind of like jelly. Like they can also look like jelly-like substances. Like they can be round, they can be more like flat. So they kind of look like snails.
This is like, for many people, this is probably so unappetizing. But yeah. If you've been through this stuff, it's like interesting.
So interesting.
It's like, what did you release? You know, like, let's share what we've seen in the toilet. it's a detox culture. So, yeah. So I've never done one of those. But I feel like had like bile dumps, if you will, where there was like a tipping point. It's interesting. I've never heard it, Ava, in the like ancestral context of that would naturally happen, that you would build up a pressure by not having fat. Because I guess when you eat fat, there's an enzymatic signal or something for the gallbladder to contract, to squeeze the bile out. So the liver makes the bile, the gallbladder stores it, and then the digestion of fat signals it to squirt out to help you digest the fat. I think so naturally you would have this ebb and flow of your caloric intake and the makeup of it. So you would have periodic periods where you wouldn't mm-hmm. have it, and then you would have a surge because you hit the jackpot, got the animal or whatever, and they probably valued fat, so you'd really go after that and probably have a big dose of it. But what would happen, so like you said, you have to kind of prepare by opening things up. Like how would that fit in that like thousands of years ago? Or
yeah, great question. I mean, to be fully honest, this is just kind of like the anecdotal story that is going around in the detox industry.
Okay, so fair enough.
I have no idea how that actually works. It just was kind of like, okay, this makes sense. Like I think the reality of it is that way back then, the livers probably weren't as congested from that. So it was safe to eat, you know, a large amount of fat. Like I know people that actually will just eat like a massive steak and we'll see some gallstone releases. So it is a natural process that happens. I just think that if we haven't done that for 20, 30 years, and there's a lot of liver congestion, it's probably not medically safe to do so because stones can get stuck. So I like where my brain would go is like they probably just because they were so used to doing that all the time, that's probably was a lot safer back then because we actually wouldn't congeal that amount of bile and like have these massive cholesterol stones. Whereas right now, like I've had clients that did their first flush and like they released stones the size of a golf ball. Well, you know, that doesn't just go through normal bile ducts. So you have to actually work with like diluting the bile ducts and softening the stones to not have this amount of like pressure get stuck in the liver and gallbladder.
And the gallstones are made of cholesterol?
Yeah, I think it's cholesterol, bilirubin, like obviously toxins and things like that, but it's mainly cholesterol, which is why when they soften, I mean, eventually they can calcify, which is at that point that you can see them on ultrasound. So someone who is scheduled for a gallbladder removal at that point, they are very, very late in that process. So the way that Western medicine looks at this is like, oh, we can't see them on the ultrasound because they're not calcified yet. So you don't have gallstones. And I can definitely attest for the complete opposite because every single one of my clients has released like hundreds of stones, whether they were small, whether they're big. And the thing is with the liver, because it's such a big organ and it has so many bile ducts, is that some of the congestion is going to be a lot deeper. So maybe the first 3-4 flushes, you're flushing out more of that like more of like the sludge and like a lot of toxicity. So it will feel like really acid. You'll still feel really hungover when you're releasing it. However, when you get to like the deep congestion, that's where the bigger stones are. So yeah. And that process looks different for everyone. I know in the liver flushing community, there's people that have done 70, 100, 300 flushes. Wow. I personally, I'm the complete opposite of that. I think that if you have to do that many flushes, there's clearly a reason that your bile is becoming stagnant and we have to figure out what that reason is. And for a lot of people, that's like mineral imbalances, heavy metals, things like that. So actually dealing with that can basically give the body the adequate nutrients to properly create the right bile salts.
I heard a theory, I'd like to get your take, that when people do those flushes, so you abstain from fat, I think you take things like malic acid or something to like soften up apple juice or something. Mm-hmm. And then you have that big dose. And I've heard people take like Epsom salt or things that like just make you go and release. And I guess they're just generally relaxant to the system. But I heard that some people think that it's all that fat and the oil you have just coagulating and you're just passing it through. And it's not necessarily old stuff that was in you, but that the flush itself is creating that. Is that possible? Or have you heard that at all?
On down that rabbit hole, that was kind of where I started. First of all, after going through my own releases, I just knew it wouldn't be possible. So the method that I use is from this company called Zen Cleanse, and they actually don't use Epsom salts or things like that. They just use natural apple enzymes. It's a much gentler process. So
what was it called again?
Zen Cleanse. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, great products overall. And when using their products, you know, you're not taking any of the Epsom salts and things like that. And when I'm seeing, you know, like the wide variety of what people are releasing, it's like your body can't create that much. It can't coagulate like a golf sized ball, like almost calcified stone. I'm like, I don't know, you know,
what do you mean when you see it? Isn't it funny? Like everybody shares, like, look what I produced.
Oh yeah, totally. Everyone shares it. I'll be eating and just, you know, watching client results and everyone's like, what are you doing? I'm like, yeah, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah. I was in a phase. I mean, I remember being in a rough place and I was trying a lot of detox things and I was on like a Facebook group about detox and like, it was always like picture and comments. Like people would say something, ask a question. And then there was like a rule in the Facebook group that you don't put it in the post. You put it in the comments for people that don't want to see. But people would share like toilet images on the regular, just totally like normal behavior. And people would find value in it. You know, it helps people like connect the dots. And that leads me to another question. So you mentioned, what did you feel like when what do you experience after a productive liver flush? Do you feel like the lights turn on?
Yeah, I mean, again, this kind of comes to, I mean, this was like the start of my detox journey. And this is like when I went so deep into that and just thought liver flushing was going to heal all my issues and going down that route. And there's a lot of temporary relief for sure. But I think what's really important is kind of that point that I brought up after around, well, we have to figure out what caused the congestion in the first place. Because if you're doing flush after flush, you're getting this temporary high. And like, mind you, it is really depleting on the system. You're not just flushing out, you know, a lot of toxins. You're also flushing out a lot of essential minerals. You're flushing out, you know, so many toxins at a time that it's really making an impact on your adrenals, your nervous system. It can irritate the kidneys, the liver. And so, yeah, it's like, you know, people in the detox world think that you can just pull stuff from the body. I did it too. I ended up in the hospital after doing that. Yep. And I was like, you know, maybe the more that I'll pull, the faster it's going to leave my body. And that's really like when, you know, the nervous system piece came in, the re-nourishing, remineralizing, all of that side of my journey. But at the time, it was giving me great sense of relief. Like there were flushes where I would just kind of move more congestion than release it. So like afterwards, you feel a little better, but nothing major. And then you have like a massive stone release. And it's like, I'm like, this is crazy, you know, like this is amazing. And I think that a lot of people just get really, really addicted to the high of cleansing, of detoxing, of all those things. But long term, you know, energy in is energy out. Like you can't just keep taking from a system and assume that like if you're just going to keep cleansing, that it will magically regenerate itself. Like that's just not how it works. And yeah, a lot of my clients will find me after they've done a lot of detox work and have either ended up in hospital or have ended up with a nervous system crash or now have amenorrhea or other, you know, thyroid issues and are like, okay, I think I'm ready to actually nourish myself, which is one thing that I think just as a society, we don't really know what nourishment actually means. So yeah.
For sure. Yeah. What's mucoid plaque? Ava.
Mucoid plaque. It was so funny. I was once on a podcast and he was like, we can't call it mucoid plaque because the podcast will get censored. And I was
what?
Like, oh, right.
Is that a controversial thing? Mucoid plaque?
It is, apparently. Yeah. So mucoid plaque, again, in my understanding, not going to make any medical claims here, but from what I've experienced and researched and seen, it is a buildup of mucus, right? Like our bodies produce mucus all the time. There's also like things like biofilms that bacteria colonies will produce, that parasites will produce and things like that. And we will swallow a lot of this mucus without necessarily having something that digests it. And specifically talking about enzymatic rich foods, right? So what you see a lot is that you hear about people seeing a lot of mucus in their stools when they do juice cleanses, for example, because the naturally occurring enzymes in there will kind of loosen up a lot of the biofilms or the mucoid plaque or mucus and will actually help release it. So you pair that with undigested food because our nervous systems are very dysregulated these days, or we have low stomach acid, or we have not enough bile output, biofilms, like I mentioned, parasites and other toxins. And it can really kind of like clog or attach itself to the walls of the small intestinal lining. So it almost kind of takes shape of like an actual stomach lining. And there are specific things that you can do. I know some people just get it out by doing colonics. Like if a body has enough vitality, it can sometimes eliminate stuff like this on its own. But a lot of popular methods are taking specific binders, like specific clays, and mixing that with something like psyllium husk to really like scrub the sides. And I've done like enzyme based ones, which is also the ones that Zen Cleanse do. They're really powerful, but I've just found things to be a little bit gentler and more effective to also mop up biofilms if we actually introduce binders at the same time. So I will work with modified citrus pectin, charcoal, bentonite clay, kind of in a specific ratio and taken at a specific time in combination then with like specific juices and the psyllium husk powder to take this stuff out of the body. And when you do that for a few days, you'll be surprised. It's like, You know, there's no way that it's just the product, because I've had people seen, you know, take a little bit of the mucoid plaque and have released like 5-6 pounds worth of waste. Yeah, crazy.
That's gross.
It's, yeah.
yeah, but I mean, when you think, like, this is a thing. If you're, there's so many people out there have gut issues. Mm-hmm. Like, you just see it. Like, I know I'm not 100% yet. I feel like I was really close for a while, a couple times, and still, like, you know, figuring out some final pieces of the puzzle maybe. But it's like the small intestines is 25 feet long or something.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard it's the area of a tennis court, like the surface area of a tennis court.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's crazy what people are walking around with and have no idea. And they might feel like, oh, I'm just a little bloated, or,
yeah,
you know, I put on a few pounds recently. Yeah. It's like you have this like ever winding garden hose in there that could store so much.
So much. Yeah.
And if you've been on the planet for 40, 50, 60 years, you know, you're gonna have stuff built up, unless you have the perfect genes or the perfect lifestyle, which nobody has.
No, and then, I mean, then we're not even talking about the heavy metals. You know, it's kind of like we're living in a world, which kind of like this is really like my most recent, like 2 years or so, where I dove really, really deep into heavy metals. And then also like really the effects of mineral depletion, because a lot of these metals are basically accessing our mineral receptors or using mineral pathways. So if you're going to have heavy metals in your gut, and like all of us do, because we're breathing the air, it's aluminum in the skies, you know, it's like, we don't need to go into conspiracies, but it's everywhere. You know, it's like you're eating canned foods, or you're just eating rice is full of arsenic. Like if you like chocolate, like I used to do, right? Full of lead and cadmium. It's just like, yeah.
Chocolate's got metals in it?
Chocolate is one of the worst crops, actually.
What?
Yeah.
Even
yeah,
an organic milk chocolate bar?
Nope. The organic ones are sometimes the worst. It's
okay, go ahead. Continue to ruin my life. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, like rice, chocolate, other crops. Obviously we all know about like mercury in fish, so like tuna and other things. And the metals, right? Like unlike other toxins can leave the body if we do a cleanse like that or something like that. But metals are extremely difficult to get out of the body, especially in the face of mineral deficiency, because the body will actually use them instead of the essential mineral that it is replacing. So if you have lead exposure for whatever reason, right? You eat a lot of chocolate and there's a lack of calcium, the body will use lead in the bones to just figure out its growth. And this is with a lot of different heavy metals as well. They will displace essential minerals and then just kind of hijack the system, stay there.
That's terrifying. Is that based on like what charge they have?
Yeah.
So yeah. Some will just have a stronger charge, so it'll like bully out the mineral that we want? Or
not necessarily bully out. It's just that I think it can. And it definitely can. And I know that the way to replace it is to essentially just take a lot of the essential mineral so that the body can actually replace it again. But it's also that we're living in, like, our soils are completely depleted, right? Like if we have some sort of gut issues, if we're having like leaky gut, things like that, or our bodies actually aren't absorbing as much from our foods, then yeah, you might be eating mineral rich foods, but how much of that are you actually going to absorb? And so it's a combination. It's like, yes, they are bullying out and replacing a lot of essential minerals, but it's also that we have probably had like 20, 30 years of some sort of deficiency, right? We all think like, oh, if I just eat these things all the time, they're really healthy for me, but we don't actually know what we're consuming. We don't know the soil that it's coming from. We don't know the contamination there. And I'm someone who like doesn't like to fearmonger at all. I think this is actually like the program that I'm on doing right now myself, and have seen insane results with, in terms of gut health specifically, to really clean out the gut because the minerals are actually being absorbed and replaced and things like that. But yeah, like if we just bring a little bit of awareness to deficiency and absorption of metals specifically, that alone can, I mean, just help us with so many issues, because then we go again in the same conversation of like, okay, well, if we have a ton of metals in the gut, and we have a lack of things like selenium and zinc and other minerals, then how can we actually build proper bile and to then, you know, dump out more of the metals that are in the system? It's kind of like this vicious cycle that we're in. And
What are some of the like high mineral foods that you recommend that, that hit the things that people are generally lacking?
Yeah, so I mean, there's so many out there, right? Like, I think if you can find a really good source of shilajit, because it's often also really contaminated, I like shilajit. I do like sometimes trace minerals. However, it doesn't really replace spring water. Like, we really want to make sure we're drinking like spring water just for its like electrical structure, its or the molecular structure, as well as just like the electrical impulse of like how water flows in nature versus going through all these stagnant pipes and reverse osmosis systems and things like that. And then I like kelp, like specific kelp supplements, or just, you know, eating fermented kelp, kelp noodles, things like that, getting some sort of seaweed in the diet. Again, you want to just make sure where it's coming from, because a lot is...
How do you really know? Like, you're not going to...
I mean, a lot of companies are very transparent about, you know, all of their numbers. It is like... And I'm really hoping that at one point we'll just get one massive website. Like, maybe someone of your listeners will feel inspired by this, but that will just nice. Have like, hey, here are all the, you know, the products that are good.
Perfect affiliate opportunity there.
I know.
I'm torn. So I've noticed over the years that there are certain things that when I eat them, I feel like I'm getting a mineral that I needed that I wasn't getting. And a couple of things that stand out. The problem is I worry about what else I'm getting with that. One is oysters. Because I've gone through parasite, mold, lime, all kinds of shit. I'm like terrified of raw fish now and raw, which I miss because I used to love raw oysters. And I love sushi. And I like deprive myself out of fear, which I hate. I hate that I make that decision out of fear. But that's just still where I'm at right now. And, And then if I get like canned oysters, I do feel like I get the benefit, like I'm getting something I needed, but also like, what else am I getting in this can of oysters? It just feel like they look old. The can, it's like, who knows what's in these metal cans and how much is getting in, who's testing this, if anyone, I don't know. So I have them, but sparingly, you know, I have a can every week or two. But I notice like that I feel good, like for a day or two after I'm like, something was important in there. Or when I don't eat a lot of chicken because of course I'm freaking scared of PUFA now. But I am getting chicken lately from a low PUFA farm from somebody that's actually coming on the podcast to talk about it. And I've been eating that chicken. I don't like it as much as other stuff. But I like it, so I'm eating it, I don't know, every week or so, week and a half maybe. But I get whole chickens because I feel like, I don't know, it's like more ethical or something. And I will, for every time I make chicken, at some point we're making broth out of that and making soup maybe or something. But when I do that and I'm cooking the bones, when I am taking the bones out of broth after I make, I chew on the ends of the bones that are soft. A lot of those bones are just, they just like disintegrate.
Yeah, yeah.
In your mouth. And people, you know, if you do this in front of someone, they're going to think you're weird. But I think this was normal behavior a long time ago.
Right, yeah.
But when I do it, I swear, I have noticed, I've done this, you know, many times now. Like I'm getting something in that bone that I must need, that I must just not be getting from the rest of my diet. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I don't know. Am I getting other things? Like, is a chicken in an area? Do they have lead in there and they're storing it in their bone? Am I getting all that? I don't know how to navigate the risk reward there, but I have noticed that there are certain foods that are like, you know, if I don't get them, I'm probably not getting something really important. And it's already hard enough. Like if you listen to a dietitian, even like traditionally educated dietitian, detail like how to put together diet to get your micronutrients, especially the minerals, it's a lot of work. Like nobody's accidentally getting everything they need.
I mean, I think you made a really good point there. I mean, first of all, with the oysters, like they're such a good source of zinc and copper, frankly. However, I stopped recommending them because of the whole pollution. Like it's kind of like, so I mean, let's just first address actually the issue with parasites in general, because I feel like I talk about this a lot, and it's just really hard to kind of go up against an Instagram war of everyone telling you that, like, you know, you have to detox parasites because they are the enemy and we have to, like, be scared of them. However, the way I like to look at it is, first of all, parasites were around way longer than we have. So how come that suddenly we're all having these parasite issues, you know? And it really comes down to two things. First of all, parasites actually can bioaccumulate heavy metals. So they've done research, and if there are studies out there that can show that fish that are swimming in polluted waters will carry up to 70% more parasites than fish in unpolluted waters. So the real issue is really not the parasites, it's the heavy metals. And this is also why so many fish these days are contaminated, because the mercury levels are so high. So in a way, because parasites can bioaccumulate metals, I think up to 1,000 times higher levels than fish can, they kind of help the host in a way. Like, I like to always say, like, every ecosystem, right?
But they're keeping the metals away from you.
Exactly.
But do they want them, or is that...
So yes and no, right? It's like, ideally, we don't want parasites, because parasites produce, again, toxic byproducts that our immune system will respond to, that we will... So it's kind of like this vicious cycle of, yes, to a degree, they're helping us because they are mopping up some of the toxicity. They're taking off some of the toxic load. The reason why there was all these heavy metal load and parasites in my liver was because they were consuming a lot of the metals that my body couldn't excrete. However, now they're also blocking up my bile ducts, further intoxicating myself. So it's kind of this vicious cycle. But if we exclusively go after these parasites, or we want to avoid the parasites, then we're really not looking at, like, the whole life cycle of, you know, these organisms and understanding why they're there. So I have seen massive parasite releases in clients, in myself, once we actually address the entire terrain. So we're working with, right, reducing the toxic load, balancing the nervous system, like doing emotional energetic work. And that actually tends to do far more for releasing parasites than any sort of parasite cleanse, which also, again, further depletes the adrenals. It can stress out the kidneys. It can overburden the liver. That alone will result in me... There's maybe like a 1% or 2% chance I'll ever do a parasite cleanse with my clients. Like, it's never really necessary until... Like, you've done so much rebuilding that your system is so healthy that at that point it's like, okay, now we can kind of address the parasites, but 9 out of 10 people will not get there in the next year or two of their healing journey. And another thing is that, you know, naturally our stomach acids should be acid enough to kill parasites. But the issue is that, again, we're lacking nutrients to build proper stomach acid. We're dysregulated, so our stomach acid is too low. So if you take HCl, hydrochloric acid, and you want to eat sushi, that's your best buffer of protection. Like HCl, bitters, all
maybe
the things.
Maybe I'll do that and treat myself to sushi. I have played with HCl back in the day. I never noticed if it really moved the needle, but that would give me maybe some confidence and enjoy a food I really enjoy. So your realignment method that you teach is really like this holistic approach that you were just kind of alluding to, that when you're checking all the boxes, you don't necessarily have to check all the boxes. You have to just get yourself in a place where your body could resume its natural ability to do a lot of this work for you.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to look different for everyone, which is why, like, when people come to me, like, there's, you know, they all think, oh, we're going to do the detoxes, we're going to do the liver flushes, we're going to do these fancy cool things, and I'm going to see parasite releases. For half of my clients, we end up just working on the emotional work, somatic work, nervous system work, energetic work, and they're going to start to see the move, like real progress, more than any physical program's ever done for them, because the physical body was never the issue. It's like, if you're stuck in chronic fight or flight, and this could be from something as deep as, like, you know, you had an intense rage when you were 5, but you never were allowed to express it. And now you become a people pleaser and you don't have boundaries. And, you know, like, what that does to your body and your nervous system is, like, you know, again, of course, you're not going to produce HCl. You're not going to produce bile. Your nervous system is in fight or flight. So yes, we can address the SIBO, but in order to address the SIBO, we have to address, like, the foundation. You know, on the total opposite side of the spectrum, I'll have people come to me that have really good emotional maturity. They actually do a lot of the somatic work. Maybe they're a nervous system coach, but they don't really know how to handle the physical. And then maybe after some digging, we found out that they had a lot of vaccines when they were young. They had amalgam fillings. Maybe they had a root canal procedure. Maybe they, you know, consumed a lot of chocolate. Sorry. And from that reason, you know, they have a lot of like mineral metal imbalances. So everything that they're going to do to kill off the SIBO, again, doesn't touch the root cause of it. So yeah, like every protocol looks so different for my clients. But essentially the through line is that I look at the mental, the physical, the emotional, and like the very foundational pieces when it comes to like mineral ratios and heavy metals and all that stuff.
And I know it could be really hard for someone that is, if you don't feel good, like when you don't feel good and you have chronic shit and all your doctors have no ideas for you, and then it's real hard to except maybe that there's like a deep emotional component that's driving a lot of this. It's like, no, I want to feel better. There's no, and it's hard to believe that you could like sit in a room with somebody and talk about something or cry something out or have some kind of emotional release. And then all of a sudden, like your dysbiotic gut is going to turn a corner for you. It's when you're in the thick of it, it's hard to imagine that stuff moving the needle for you when you think there's like, I don't know, a parasite in you and you got to get it out.
Yeah.
How do you approach that idea? If somebody's feeling be near a bathroom or whatever, mm-hmm. one of, you know, the many symptoms that somebody deals with when their gut's wrecked and they've never done any kind of emotional regulation or nervous system regulation. How do you approach that?
Yeah, great question. So I will take most of my clients through a program. So I have a group program that I run and then I do one-on-one work too, but I kind of give them still access to this program. And the program really goes into giving people the understanding and the ability to recognize within themselves what the deeper emotional roots are and how to move through them. And I see it time and time again, the exact example that you gave, someone will come to me, they're convinced, no, it's the parasites. I have parasites. I was diagnosed with it. I have to get them out, right? To even feel the amount of like angst that that's underneath that, that is the state that that nervous system has been in probably for many years. So basically all I do with the specific like methods and things that I use is I'll hold up a mirror for them to see, wow, my body is in this state of extreme anger and frustration. I'm angry towards my body. I'm angry towards the medical system. I'm angry towards my father who abandoned me when I was five, right? Like it's all the same like emotional buildup. And yeah, in the beginning, that's really, really confronting for a lot of people and they don't want to look at it and maybe they'll throw a fit. And then, you know, a week later, they're like, you were right. Okay, I'm ready to deal with this. And that's typically when we do, we go into deep emotional release somatic work. So I will either guide them through this myself. I also have coaches work under me who are trained in this modality as well. So they can support my clients, or I will just teach my clients themselves. It's a part of what we do as well, because ultimately, right, like the real value is that if you walk away from working with me, that when something comes up that you know how to navigate that. So I teach my client the somatic techniques that I use on myself when a symptom comes up or when, you know, I get a diagnosis of some sorts to actually understand, well, what is the deeper emotional root to this? Or what is like the deeper energetic lesson that I have to go through here, or the deeper karmic lesson? And it is, you know, not always easy to kind of wake people up to these things, but once they get it, they really get it. And I feel like just with the type of clients that I attract, they are willing to really go deep into that work. And yeah, they'll actually usually see like pretty quick results. And I feel like I'm pretty, for me, it's pretty easy to really sense like, oh, this person actually, like they have a lot of repressed emotions that are kind of blocking their ability to heal. Or if there's actually, you know, actually a really regulated person in front of me that just needs a little bit more physical support. And regardless, I'll support both. And I think the best thing to help people understand is like the direct correlation to, yes, you do have a parasite issue. Like the reason that you have parasites, again, is because anger, when we look at traditional Chinese medicine, is associated with the liver. So if you are going to have a lot of repressed anger, that is, again, going to prevent your liver from properly functioning. So you're going to have a lot of those liver congestion symptoms. You're going to be overly toxic. Now you're going to see parasites and heavy metals. And for that same reason, I'll have clients go through a massive bile dump, for example, after doing this emotional release work. And suddenly we'll see 10, 20, 30 parasites released in the toilet the next day after they've had this big cathartic experience. So once they see that correlation, I feel like it's easy and they're like, okay, now I'm willing to go through it.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's such an important concept. I mean, it's like the nervous system's running the show and it has to believe that it's a good time to do stuff like that. Because if it's been trying to protect you, if, you know, whatever stress it is, if it's some childhood thing, or if it's you got in a car accident in your teen years, or you were forcing yourself to, I don't know, cut weight for modeling or mm-hmm. wrestling or whatever the thing is, whatever yeah. the stress comes in so many different forms. But it's like the tool that our nervous system has is such a blunt object. It's like whatever the stress is, whatever the form is, we can shift resources, shift from this like parasympathetic state to the sympathetic. It's like turn on this switch or turn down this switch and turn up this switch. Or this little magic box of hormones where it's like flip these up and flip these down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then based on what that stress is and how that correlates to maybe your genetics, we'll make some expression of that stress through something that, you know, is generally like one of the common things that we all die from or something like, whether it's neurodegenerative disease or some diabetes or cancer, but it's because like our system is so simple in a way, which is great though, because it's easier to take the controls over a simple system than a real complex system. So, but it starts by just like getting the stage set almost and letting this nervous system that's like modulating whether we're going to jump into these like stress-based emergency energy systems or whatever, back burner, your immune system or digestion or sex hormones or steroid hormones. It's like we have to get that system to believe, hey, this is a safe time. You could chill out and start doing these things and trust the inner wisdom or whatever. But if you have no reference of that, if you've never done anything like that, it's just hard when it's the physical body that you're experiencing and it's constant and you're thinking about it all the time. And that's a tough thing but also like you get this amazing moment that people will be able to experience when they could connect those dots. I've had a few of those over the years where it's like I've chipped away at something really important emotionally and there's been like, a corner turned, you know, where you have this like this big step of the whole overall physical healing process, and then you could like reference that in the rear window. It's like now you have a reference that you know that there's possibilities, and then you could be curious of like what else is underlying. It's just that initial hump when you have no reference and you have to trust somebody.
But yeah,
that mm-hmm. says like, I've done this trust, you know, I've done this and it's real. And it's like, how could this be real?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things, right? It's like, and I'm always super grateful that my clients trust me. And I think that was part of the reason why I've had to go through such a tumultuous journey, because it's like, okay, if this person has done it and like, just as what you're saying, I always like to tell people health is actually really simple. If we understand the language that the body speaks, it is so simple. And yeah, I'm not like a neurochemist with a PhD that can tell you exactly everything that's going on in the body. But I think that because I am not speaking that language, that actually is to my advantage, because I can speak to people on like, hey, I know this is going to feel this way because I've gone through it. And that's why this happens. And I think that we're going to see that more and more in the health and wellness industry, of really like people that are up and coming that have gone through things themselves versus just studied in a textbook, because a lot of this stuff just isn't, you can't learn it without experiencing it. You can't Like, you can't tell people, well, if you have a panic attack, this is what you do, until you experience one so bad that you have to find tools in that moment to regulate yourself and to say, hey, this works for me. And of course, like, there's a common things, but I have, like, I've really, really seen by going through these really intense experiences myself, including like a full nervous system breakdown, like panic attacks, like insane, like really, really intense nervous system stuff, like cardiac diagnosis, like I feel like I've gotten it all. And by going through that, I can empathize so much with my clients and support them through that, because it's actually like, hey, well, this is just what your body is saying right now. See, like, I've gone through it. I'm fine. I'm healthy. And just, so can you. And it is really like taking a step into the unknown, especially when a lot of like the, you know, the practitioners these days, like, their main form of marketing is Instagram. Like, okay, well, am I just going to trust this random person on Instagram with my health and my life? And yeah, it is definitely an interesting time that we're in, but
I don't really see that. That's I'm not on the Instagram thing. I keep myself away from that. I feel like I don't trust myself to be on that. It's one that I've been able to spare. I have my other issues, my other social stuff, but the coaching you do, so you say you've worked one-on-one, but you do group. That sounds like it would be really important, something like this, so people could kind of get that support and learn from each other. What does that look like?
Yeah, so I basically created something, as I mentioned, called the Realignment Method. And so I take them through a 12-week process where we really go from the foundations up all the way to kind of like the deeper practices and the deeper themes and methods. So what that looks like is that if someone chooses to join a group program, they will get an intake with one of the coaches that are all trained by me, working under me, and then fill out this really, really in-depth form so that we really understand, okay, where are you at nervous system-wise, nutrition-wise? Also, like, what are your beliefs about health? I think this is something that people really underestimate. If they think like, oh, vegan diet is the only way I'm going to heal myself, right? We probably have to work with them in that sense or show them differently to get them out of there. So yeah, we do really, really in-depth intakes. And then based on that, I personally create a plan for them. So they will just follow the 12 weeks, but then also have, you know, specific nervous system exercises, specific somatic exercises, journal prompts, supplements, diet recommendations from me personally. And then I take them through 12 steps. So 12 different weeks that kind of start with like the foundations of terrain theory, you know, specific drainage tools like bowel drainage, liver drainage, just getting the system open. And then bringing in things like the nervous system regulation, emotional release tools, and kind of building up from there to the more advanced practices. So that's been really, really rewarding. I still love to work people one-on-one, work with people one-on-one even more, because that's where I actually get to have like deep dive sessions and do somatic release and more of like the energy work, emotional work. So yeah, either one-on-one or group. And then I also will sometimes get people, for people that are just curious, they don't know what they want yet, I have like a 10-day reset that people can do, which is a mucoid plaque cleanse with the binders and also some somatic exercises and nervous system exercises through it all. And that's gotten really great feedback, because I feel like so many people have done cleanses without addressing the nervous system. And this really prepares your body to say, as you mentioned, right, like, it's safe to do this right now. And am I actually in a place to have my body go through this process? And yeah, I feel like that's kind of where I differentiate from other practitioners. I will often advise against detoxification for about 50% of my clients, because it is not the right time yet, because they are stuck in that chronic fight or flight. And then, right, we have all these other tools that we can introduce that will allow the body to detox naturally without any sort of forceful thing, because ultimately, if we are dysregulated, all of our detox pathways shut off. So the key to detoxification would be to kind of get you in a state of that nice parasympathetic.
Do you use any of the like health tech, I guess, with the nervous system gadgets and such?
You know, I think for some, like I personally do, I don't think it's necessary. You know, it's like the best regulators are the things that are free, like good sleep, having conversations that are uncomfortable, like standing up for yourself, grounding, sunlight, meditation, breath. I love like my Qi Swing machine, my biomat. I have a Pulsetto. I don't really use it. I played around with it a little bit for vagus nerve. regulation. I'll do red light therapy. Like I feel like I have all the gadgets myself, but it's not like I'm telling my clients, so unless you have these, you're never going to be regulated.
Right. What's the, you said one I hadn't heard, G-swing machine?
G-swing machine. Oh, you're going to love this one.
I do use some gadgets sometimes. I feel like for some people that stuff could be really useful. If you're like, especially if you have a really demanding job, like having like an Apollo running on your ankle or something, something where like you don't, when you don't have the time, but you want that drip that your brain is recognizing throughout the day, especially if you have a stressful job.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, the reality of a lot of those things, and especially when you get into like mineral ratios and how they are depleted from chronic stress, and how even when you look at an HTMA test, for example, which is something I've gone really, really deep into recently and I'm currently studying, it's like there's actually specific mineral ratios that will correlate with situations like jobs or relationships that are really stressful and no longer in alignment. And it's like, yes, you can do the Apollo or the Pulsetto to kind of give like a temporary boost. However, until that situation changes, which either means that your perspective or your perception of this job that is stressful needs to change. And that can happen through, right, doing hypnotherapy, somatic work, emotional release work, by visualizing yourself going into those work scenarios and actually being safe and calm and regulated. So there's either perception change that needs to happen or the job needs to change. Otherwise, the body can't get out of that chronic pattern because it's like the, you know, the constant circumstance informing the body that there's something unsafe. So yeah, and those clients, like, I'll just be really blunt and say, hey, you know, we can do what we can do. We can try whatever we want. And I will say as well, like, what would freedom look like to you? Like, what would that feel like in your nervous system? And that quite often might be the thing that will really, really change the game in terms of their health. And sometimes you have to give the body the nutrients that it needs and the support that it needs so that the person feels more energized to then make the decision to maybe leave the job or to leave the relationship. So yeah, it's kind of like it goes hand in hand with that. But I do think that the devices for some people can be really helpful.
So what was the one? The Qi swing. Tell me.
Qi swing. So is this little device, I'm going to assume it's like, it comes from like the Eastern world and philosophies. So it's basically a little device where you put your ankles in and it just kind of swings them in this like circular figure eight motion.
Oh, I have seen that. Like you're laying down with it. Yep. It's like a soothing thing.
Exactly. And it's amazing for lymphatic drainage. It's amazing for like obviously chi, prana, life force energy to circulate through the body. And it's really, really good to put you in the parasympathetic state. So yeah, I'll have like a really busy day or, you know, do interviews or be working all day. And I lay on that for 10 minutes and it feels like I've just taken like a 2-hour nap. So it's not expensive. I think it's like $150 on Amazon. So if there's one tool that I recommend, it's definitely that one.
Interesting. I probably don't need any more gadgets, but that has, but like just the idea of shaking, like I'll find myself, you know, in the wild, animals run away and then they shake. And, you know, that's probably on some level what's going on with that. It's just like a nice, you get to lay down and allow it shake you. But I mean, even after if I'm in the gym and I do a set of something, like I'll grab my thigh and I'll like shake it
Like
let the tension come out and recover. And, sometimes I'll just do a full body shake, or sometimes I'll get on a vibe plate, which I don't feel like is as effective as just me shaking me.
Yeah.
But but yeah, it's like there's something to shaking.
Yeah.
There's something to shaking. And I know that some of the different somatic based or emotional tension release things will deploy shaking, and it's that's probably really underrated technique that everybody has access to that doesn't cost
100%. Yeah, that's like the one thing I'll tell people, like if you're in a rut or if you're not feeling good or even like you just had an argument, just put on like a banger song and just like go shake for 3 minutes and you're gonna feel better. Like that's like the best somatic like energetic release for sure.
I feel like I can go on and on with this stuff. I like all these topics. I really enjoy this. Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we wrap this up?
No, I feel pretty good and complete.
If people want to see if it's a good fit to work with you or your team, how do they go about doing that?
Yeah, so I share a lot on Instagram, which is just my first dot last name. So eva.hoft, as well as my website, which is just my first and last name.com. On my website, you'll find all the information on the group program, one-on-one coaching, as well as the 10-day reset that I mentioned for the mucoid plaque removal and kind of like an intro cleanse. That one's only $97, so a great place for anyone that like might feel hesitant or really overwhelmed with this kind of work. And then, yeah, Instagram is where I'll also announce, you know, new offers, like group things that I'm doing, or to subscribe to my newsletter. So you can do all that from my website as well.
Okay. Do you do any in-person stuff?
I do. Yeah. So I'm currently in LA, but my primary residence is in Austin, Texas. In-person is definitely my favorite. I will say that this past year has really forced me into like being 99% remote. But if there's people that are either willing to travel or that are in the area, I do in-person stuff as well. And sometimes we'll offer one-off sessions depending on how booked up my one-on-one clients are as well.
Okay. Well, thanks. I appreciate you reaching out and taking the time and talking about plaque and flushing and chi swings and all this weird stuff. And for listeners, as always, grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you feel like you're struggling with something and you just can't put your finger on it and you want some guidance, a little guidance could be really helpful. So check out Ava's work and see if it's a good fit for you. And thanks again for listening. Have a great day, everyone.